Gains arising on disposals of qualifying shareholdings are exempt and losses are not allowable.
I should emphasize in this regard that we are talking about shareholdings owned by companies, not shareholdings owned by individuals or trusts. As you can see from your screen, the legislation says that gains are not chargeable, and conversely, of course, losses are not therefore allowable, where an investing company which has held a substantial shareholding in an investee company throughout a 12-month period disposes of shares in that investee company. Obviously, the first thing that we need to look at is what do we mean by a substantial shareholding? A substantial shareholding represents 10% or more of the ordinary share capital of the investee company. In addition, the investor company must also be beneficially entitled to 10% of the profits and net assets available for distribution to equity holders in that investee company. It should be remembered in this context that the phrase equity holder is a slightly wider term than that of simply ordinary shareholder. It includes, for example, the holders of convertible loan stock, and as a result, it could sometimes be the case that if a client company has got an investment of, let's say, exactly 10% of the ordinary share capital of the investee company, it might not be a qualifying shareholding if there are convertible loan stock holders as well as shareholders in that company. This exemption is dependent on the investor company having held a substantial shareholding in the investee company throughout a 12-month period beginning no more than 2 years prior to that disposal. The purpose underlying this rather convoluted qualifying period is that it allows a shareholding, which was once substantial, to continue to qualify for exemption for a further 12 months if the shares are disposed of in two or more tranches. For example, if you look at your screen, you will see in our next example that Vaughan Limited has owned 15% of Key Trading Limited since 1998.
On the 1st of June 2010, Vaughan Limited disposes of a 10% stake in Key Trading Limited at a substantial profit.
This gain clearly qualifies for the substantial shareholding exemption because Vaughan has satisfied the requirements for at least the last 6 years. And as a result, that is more than enough to claim the exemption. However, let us suppose that some months later, the directors of Vaughan Limited are considering the possibility of selling their remaining 5% shareholding in Key Trading Limited.
Although that 5% stake no longer constitutes a substantial shareholding, the exemption is still available, provided that Vaughan Limited makes the disposal at some stage in the 12 months following the 1st of June 2010. In other words, provided they make the disposal on or before the 1st of June 2011, although it is no longer a substantial shareholding, the company would have qualified for at least 12 months in the last 24. However, let us suppose that because of adverse market conditions, the position is that the shares in Key Trading Limited would now be sold at a loss. In these circumstances, it would probably be sensible for Vaughan Limited to wait until after the 1st of June 2011 before making its disposal, because it will then no longer comply with 12 months out of the last 24 when it qualified, and as a result, instead of a loss being disallowed, it would become an ordinary allowable capital loss.
If an investment is likely to be disposed of at a profit, then it will be important for the investor company to ensure, as far as possible, that it complies with the rules. If, on the other hand, its investment is likely to be disposed at a loss, then it will be appropriate to look at ways of deliberately breaking the substantial shareholding rule so as to ensure the investment loss will qualify for capital loss relief. There are one or two special rules where the shareholding in an invested-in company is spread around a group. It is important to appreciate, for this purpose, a group means a principal company and its 51% subsidiary, not the normal definition of a principal company and its 75% subsidiary. The key rule here to bear in mind is that all shareholdings in the investee company can be aggregated in order to ascertain whether or not the 10% test is satisfied. If you look at your screen, you will see that we have a parent company, Gough Limited, which has got an interest in Stewart Limited of only 5%. That itself is not sufficient to qualify for the substantial shareholding exemption. However, Gough Limited also has a 60% stake in a subsidiary, Giles Limited, which in turn owns another 7% of Stewart Limited. Between the two companies, Gough and Giles, a combined interest in Stewart of 12% is established. And as a result, if either company were to dispose of its stake in Stewart Limited, the substantial shareholding exemption would be available. Notice that there is absolutely no requirement in these circumstances to work out an indirect interest. Gough's interest via Giles in Stewart counts for 7%. It does not represent 60% of 7%, i.e. 4.2%. That is not a relevant factor. One rule that is worth highlighting, that is likely to be a benefit from time to time, is as follows. If a company goes into liquidation, it loses beneficial ownership of its assets as a result of those assets vesting in the liquidator. Let us consider a situation where an investor company is being liquidated and, as part of the liquidation, its trading subsidiaries are being sold off. At the time of the disposal, the investor company would no longer have a beneficial interest in its investment, and as a result, the substantial shareholding relief would not be available. Fortunately, the legislation has spotted this possibility, and there is now a specific provision which protects the investing company from this outcome, as far as the substantial shareholding rules are concerned. Therefore, if the investor company would have qualified for the relief prior to the liquidator being appointed, the fact that it is now in liquidation will have no effect on the arrangement. The liquidator will be able to get the substantial shareholding exemption when it comes to dispose of the various subsidiaries. As you can readily imagine, the legislation requires both the investor company and the investee company to satisfy a number of conditions. And it will be no great surprise to learn that a number of these conditions revolve around trading status. Let's begin by having a look at the main conditions for the investor company. Here there are two main requirements. The first is that the investor company must be either a sole trading company or else a member of a trading group, beginning with the start of the latest 12-month period in which it passed the substantial shareholding test, and ending with the date of the disposal. In addition, the company must also be a sole trading company or a member of a trading group immediately after the disposal. It is worth highlighting one key point here, because that latter condition sounds pretty much like a trap in certain circumstances. Suppose that your client is a pure holding company which owns a single 100% trading subsidiary. For the 12 months prior to the disposal of that subsidiary, it of course satisfied the first condition, because it was obviously a member of a trading group. However, once it sells its only subsidiary for cash, it is no longer a member of a trading group immediately after the disposal. There are no other companies involved, and it does not appear to be a sole trading company because it was originally a holding company for its trading subsidiary. All that has happened is that its original investment in the subsidiary has been replaced with a quantity of cash which is now sitting in its balance sheet. Clearly, to get round this difficulty, it might be possible, with some pre-planning, to ensure that you don't fail this second requirement. For instance, if it was known that the only trading subsidiary was in due course to be sold, could some part of the subsidiary trade be hived up to the parent company? When the subsidiary was sold, we could then argue that the holding company was actually a sole trading company immediately after the disposal. This is, of course, subject to not falling foul of the anti-avoidance rules. In this context, I should mention that it may be a cause for concern if a company which has been selling a subsidiary, or selling a number of subsidiaries, has a substantial amount of cash in its balance sheet. This may adversely affect its trading company status, depending on the facts. This would obviously be a particular consideration in the example that I have recently been discussing. In addition, there are a number of conditions that the investee company must satisfy. The legislation says that it must have been a trading company or a holding company of a trading group or subgroup for the same 12-month period as the investor company. The legislation also goes on to say that it must be a trading company or a holding company of a trading group or subgroup immediately after the disposal. In addition, there is another provision which needs to be borne in mind. Where an investee company ceases to trade, for example, because its trade is hived up to another group member, or possibly because the investee company is put into liquidation, it clearly would be the case that when that investee company was disposed of, it was no longer a trading company. And as such, the substantial shareholding exemption would presumably not be available to the investor company. However, an exemption, often called the second subsidiary exemption, exists to deal with this situation. In these circumstances, any gain on the investee company shares continues to qualify for the substantial shareholding exemption for a further 2 years. In other words, as long as it does not take more than 2 years to wind up the investee company, and certainly in most cases it should not, the substantial shareholding relief is preserved.